and always streaming on the Civic Media app.
This is CBS News on the Hour, sponsored by O'Reilly Auto Parts.
I'm Heather Bosch. Elon Musk is demanding hundreds of thousands of federal workers explain what they accomplished in the last week. And if they don't respond to his email, he'll take it as a resignation. Musk heads President Trump's cost-cutting department. Everett Kelly heads a federal workers union.
I've had so many to reach out to me. And, you know, I'm so proud of this workforce, you know, because they are strong. And what they're telling me is that they're going to stand strong and see this through.
Republican Congressman Mike Lawler on ABC's This Week.
When you're staring down a $36 trillion in debt and counting, obviously something has to give.
This just in, USAID employees received an email today from the Office of the Administrator saying that as of midnight, non-essential direct hires globally will be placed on administrative leave. Those deemed essential will be notified by today at 5 p.m. Eastern. Prayers for an ailing Pope.
He took a little bit of a turn for the worse, but we hope that he recovers.
It's definitely sad, right? And I would want him to get better.
Pope Francis is in critical condition with pneumonia. CBS's Seth Doan has more from Rome.
The Vatican is saying tonight that Pope Francis's prognosis remains guarded. Doctors have been saying it could go either way.
Tomorrow marks 3 years since the start of the Russia-Ukraine war. That has Ukraine's president rebutting some of President Trump's recent claims. More from CBS's Linda Kenyon.
President Trump has falsely called President Zelensky a dictator, said Ukraine started the war when it was Russia that invaded Ukraine, and has said Zelensky is unpopular at home. Speaking through an interpreter, Zelensky said he's willing to step down for the sake of peace. And that's not all he said.
I can exchange stepping down for NATO membership. If these are the conditions, immediately.
Linda Kenyon, CBS News, The White House.
The U.S. Middle East envoy Steve Witkoff is hopeful Hamas will release all of the remaining Israeli hostages as part of ceasefire negotiations. He tells CBS's Face the Nation.
We will get to stage two, or phase two. And I'm very focused on that, and I think it's going to happen.
Democratic New York Governor Kathy Hochul is defending states' rights.
There's areas where we're going to work with you on immigration and getting the violent criminals off our streets. We do not dispute that. But don't think that you can just come in and bully us around and not expect a reaction from governors.
Hochul on Face the Nation. On Friday, President Trump called out Maine's governor for taking him to court on behalf of transgender rights. Republican lawmakers in some states are threatening local officials with lawsuits, fines, and jail time if they resist the Trump administration's crackdown on illegal immigration. This is CBS News.
Think O'Reilly Auto Parts for all your car care needs. Get the parts and service you need fast from the professional parts people at O'Reilly Auto Parts.
James here, host of Unlabeled, your 90s mixtape, every Sunday from 8 to 9 on WFHR. It's your weekly dose of music, nostalgia, and pop culture exclusively on locally grown radio.
Your news, conversations, and a whole lot of fun. It's all on your local Civic Media radio station or the Civic Media app.
Central Wisconsin weather. I'm Corey Hartman. For tonight, temperatures in the low 30s and winds gusting to 25 out of the south. Winds continue to gust on Monday. They switch around to the west. We'll have partly sunny skies and a high near 45. Some sprinkles or flurries on Monday night with a low of 27.
It's 39 at our studios.
You're listening to pre-recorded content produced by Civic Media.
Hello, world. Welcome to WFHR's Director's Playhouse for this February 12th, 2025, session 59, I believe, Seth.
Yes, it is. Oh. We're almost to 60. That's crazy.
Your host and program director here, James J. Mailoff. I am joined by my partner in art, our head of production, Seth Habager. Seth, the mics are rolling. Let's go.
Let's get going here. Another fun series that we are hoping to start with this interview today.
Yeah.
We changed the name of the show to Playhouse, and there's kind of a reason for that, because you know theater is very important to us, and we have so many great theater groups in this area all throughout central Wisconsin. So seems like a logical next step for us.
We asked the best listeners in radio to welcome to the WFHR stage longtime director, actor, creative, and one of the founders of Wisconsin Rapids Community Theater, local legend Kathy Miles.
Thank you. Although legend is pushing it.
I think I'm actually understating it. I completely disagree. We're starting off the interview completely disagreeing because I think it's actually could have.
Oh, good. This will be fun.
Right. Yeah. I feel like I could have used even more verbs there. Kathy, I appreciate you being here so very much. We'll touch on some of the reasons for that in a moment here. And certainly your connection to Wisconsin Rapids Community Theater, your connections to this area so much. But first off, just want to get to know you a little bit more and let our audience get to know you a little bit more. We love to ask people their origin stories. Can you tell us a little bit about where you're from in your early days?
Well, I am born and bred here, but my parents liked to travel, so I spent a bit of time in Florida growing up, but graduated from high school and Lincoln High School, and came back here after I had finished college and been away for about a year. But I will say that local origin in regard to theater, I just always loved theater. Story, I remember being a five-year-old and wearing lipstick for the school play in kindergarten at Buren. And bragging that I was going to be an actress. So not an actress, but I still that love for theater came early.
Yeah. It's funny how many stories are somewhat similar when you talk to creatives, when you talk to actors or even musicians. We have a lot of musicians on the air, and you ask them when they first picked up an instrument, 5, 6 years old. Very similar with athletes, too. You know, growing up around a lot of hockey players, most of them are on skates by the time they're 5. It's interesting where these passions begin, you know, and how quickly they can happen.
Yes, and I have to say I'm totally in with Malcolm Gladwell's theory about the 10,000 hours, because I'm sure I have way more than 10,000 hours.
Yeah. One of the things we love about this show is certainly get to know some of our locals and put the spotlight on some of the local events and local companies in our area and people in our area, but also artists supporting artists and encouraging young artists out there and helping them build where they're going. So these origin stories are not only interesting and cool to hear about from you and the individuals we have on, but I think encouraging as well, hopefully encouraging to young artists. I know I was 7 and knew what I wanted to do right away, and would say it to anybody that would listen. And you know, that's kind of where it kind of stopped. I didn't really have a lot of people I could go to want to be an actor or want to be creative. And there was no blueprint. We're trying to help people find or give them some version of that. And I appreciate you sharing those things. When it comes to it, you kind of touched on this a little bit. When you first found that you wanted to do this, that you wanted to be, whether it was an actor or whatever type of creative, you found that from a young age. Was there something that happened that you can remember that made you want to? Like, for me, I was watching Mork and Mindy, and I saw Robin Williams. And I'm like, oh, that's what I want to do. I want to make people laugh. I want to take people out of their lives and make them feel something. Was there anything like that for you?
No, I just like to boss people around, I think.
That's good. That works.
So directing was a logical choice. But I want to go back to what you said about supporting. And I have to say, I listened to this program. I think this is really, really great that you're doing this. And I want to know when you're going to be interviewed for it.
That's coming.
Oh, good.
Eventually,
good.
We'll get to it, yeah. As much as he doesn't want to. But, yeah, we'll get him on there.
But I do think that as you said, it's important to be supportive. And I try to do that in my personal life. Whenever I'm back in Rapids, I try to get around to, I've been at the Alexander House, at the Cultural Center, at the Community Theater. I try to get around to those things because I think we need to be supportive of each other, but we also grow from that, that we don't limit ourselves in terms of our vision. I can't just put all my focus on theater because all your inspirations come from everything around you.
Isn't it wild how you can, if you're, whether you're writing something or you're preparing for a role or you're working on a song, and where those influences can come from? I think as a writer, I've almost been just as influenced by like songwriters as I have by poets and authors and some of that. You just don't know where that impact can come from. And on the reverse of that, that's why, to Kathy's point, it's so important to support those things, especially, you know, I love seeing musicians go to plays or you know, theater people going and showing up and supporting a music act or something. A lot of the crossover that we have.
Well, to that point about writing, my new hobby, or it's not that new, I've been doing it for a few years, is writing stories. And I find that being in theater, I can hear those voices of the characters, and I approach them, each of the characters in my stories, the way you would approach a character from an actor's point of view, and you listen to hear, oh, would they really say that? Is that honest coming from them or not? And the other thing that I find is the whole sense of drama and the dynamic. So when you're writing a story, you need to also have those builds and then the lulls and the high points, the way you have in theater. So they really cross-pollinate.
Well said. Kathy, when it comes to influences, this is another one of our favorite questions. Who were some of the influences that you had either early on or just in general?
Oh, gosh. I can't think of an early on influence.
Because I asked the tough questions, Kathy.
Questions. I was here in Wisconsin Rapids, and there weren't influences here. So I spent my time reading, reading plays, reading books about theater, coming home and doing that every night for hours after school. So my influences were from outside of the community in terms of theater. I always wanted to be part of that world. But I think that's also maybe one of the reasons why I started the community theater here was because I wanted to make sure that other people growing up here would have that opportunity that I felt so much was missing in my life. I did have a second grade teacher who gave me the lead role in the Buren all-school play, and I really appreciated that, Mrs. Douglas. So, you know, maybe that's about as close as I came to an inspiration locally.
To the point of you know what I was saying before and everything too of you just don't know who can influence you and where those influences can come. It doesn't always have to be somebody from the artistic world that impacts you and that gives you, like you just mentioned there. That's a great example. And I think too that it should be noted as well. You are an influence for so many, and so that there's that part too that I have to mention as well. When it comes to as you've gotten older and your career has been a little bit more established, do you find yourself being influenced or just being encouraged or invigorated by younger artists or other artists that you come across?
Oh my gosh! So I think that one of the reasons that I like directing is that I'm like the total fangirl. I love actors and I'm in awe of them getting up on stage. And I've been really lucky in that I've been able to meet a lot of people in my life. But I also really love when I have a chance to work with someone, especially someone locally, who I can feel that passion. I can feel how interested they are, how much they want to better themselves, and to work with them intensely and in a one-on-one capacity, and help them to realize what they have in them. But yeah, I'm I love actors. Yeah. So that's a good thing if you're going to direct us.
Absolutely.
It helps.
Kathy, you touched on something that I really wanted to make sure that we took some time to talk about. And it's something that all three of us can relate to. Seth is an actor and from Minnesota and from upper northern Minnesota. Mm-hmm. And I started out in the perfect place to start as an actor in Chicago. I moved up here and to much more of a rural area. And when it came to that, I saw opportunities go away, and I saw this in my head. I thought, how am I ever going to get a break here? How am I ever going to learn as an actor here in central Wisconsin? Where's the culture? Where's all these things? And then as I'm going through high school, I find out about Wisconsin Rapids Community Theater. And there's a community theater in town? There's all this? And it just opened up a world to me that was missing until then, and gave me opportunities from a young age to not only fine-tune the craft and all those the things that come along with that, but just the sheer ability to be able to do theater as an adult in that, not in high school, not in a grade school situation or anything. And I'm one person. I guarantee there's hundreds of people that have a very similar story, that this happens because of you and this idea. And I want to go there into the beginning of those early days of creating Wisconsin Rapids Community Theater and what that was like. How did it even get started?
I have to thank my mother for that, who is not with us anymore. But I had been out of college for a year. I'd worked at some regional theaters in New York, in Milwaukee, in Atlanta, in Florida. And I was coming back home from New York, where I thought I was going to move to attend a cousin's wedding. And I didn't know what I wanted to do next. And my mother said, Kathy, you know, there's a theater at the brand new Macmillan Library.
Oh, that's awesome.
Wow. And you should start a theater here. And of course, I'm sure she wanted me to stick around because, you know, sure, mothers want their kids to stick around. And I walked over to the theater. I said, I'd like to speak to the director. And it was Ray Hernandez. And I said, I'd like to start a theater here. And I talked to him for a little while. He said, can you come back in about an hour? We have a board meeting. And I was supposed to be leaving on a trip for Door County.
Wow.
And I ran back home, which was like about a 5-minute run because I live so close to the library, and said, hey, can we postpone getting in the car for a little bit? So I went back to the board meeting and I talked to the board and I told them what I need. And I said, we'll need a little bit of seed money. And there was an article published in the newspaper and I got a call from my 7th grade flute teacher, Irene Charette, and she said, my husband and I will give you the seed money. Just let us know how much you need.
Whoa.
And
wow.
And I had that.
Mm-hmm.
It actually ended up being much less than I needed because we were very frugal. And I had my mother, who was a force of nature, who enlisted all of her friends in Riverview Hospital Auxiliary, in her church women's group, in AAUW Bridge Club, every group that she was in. They sold tickets. They bought tickets. My mother would go door to door to the businesses in town and say, wouldn't you like to buy four tickets to this play that we're going to have? And we ended up with a really good audience for that very first play. Mm. I also have to mention that I was very lucky with that. I chose The Glass Menagerie. Yeah. Right. I love Tennessee Williams.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And I love that play. And one of my high school classmates happened to be back in town, Neil Daring. So I said, Neil, wouldn't you like to play Tom? And I had Bill Young and Joan Johannes come to auditions. And so I had Tom, I had my gentleman caller, and I had my Laura, and I needed an Amanda. And my neighbor across the street, Nancy Lucas, had invited me to come and be part of AAUW's children's theater group, and they had that little, and it was taking place, the meeting was taking place at the home of Pat Tease. Well, Pat asked me to stay around after the rehearsal. We talked, we found out we had both gone to Northwestern. I found out she was an actress. I said, oh, I'm looking for an Amanda. Oh gosh, I can't come to the auditions that night. I'll audition you separately.
Nice.
I mean, I didn't even need to audition her. And so she was our Amanda, and she was amazing. And I had this wonderful cast, and it was such a strong start to a community theater. And I had my father building the sets for me, my sister putting together the programs for me. Mm-hmm. And at the end of that first year, I had a list of 100 people who had worked in the community theater in that first year. Wow. So I had that list to build on. Mm-hmm. I thought, when I started this, I thought, oh, yeah, I'll give it a year and then I'll pass it on. At the end of the first year, I realized it wasn't strong enough to pass on. So I stayed around a couple more years, and I had also organized to teach a class out at Midstate called Theater Crafts. So I taught people how to build sets, how to look for costumes, props, lights, everything that I had learned in 7 years of undergrad and grad and MFA programs. And at the end of those 3 years, they were ready to take off and continue it on their own. And I have to say, when I hear your story about realizing there was a community theater in town, those are the things that they touch my heart so much. And they're the things that make me feel the most proud of this, of anything I've done in my life. Because it's that what you can do for others and how you can touch others and you can help and support them. Mm-hmm.
I think it gets lost in the shuffle when we talk about creatives, but the majority, if not almost every creative you meet, one of the callings to do this is to do for others. Well, we are gifted with this skill set, and we talked about this a lot during the pandemic, where we wanted to do good, we wanted to put in our communities, want to help, but I don't have a doctor's degree, I don't have certain things, but I got this skill set. What can I do with this, and how can I impact my community and help and do some good with the tools I was given? And entertaining people is still a big resource, is still a be able to do that. The economic impact that entertainment brings to communities. We've been able to find more and more, I think, not just as creatives, but the world in itself and society in itself, I think, has come around to this way of thinking and realizing, the creatives and the creative art world, it has an impact on almost every aspect of our lives. Whether I take a movie in or I go see a band or anything like that, that's lower taxes. That helps it ties into so many things. Mm-hmm. And while, even in this day and age, it's gotten a lot better, but the creative kid out there that's in junior high, that's in high school, there is no more junior high, it's in grade school, that is in high school or something like that, that feels like we did, or that was looking for that outlet, or looking for, just like-minded people, or people to be friends with, or people that, share a similar interest or something, this gives that. It's just as important as kids being able to take hunting classes or fishing classes or driver's ed or any of these other things that are very popular in this area. This is just as popular. This is just as needed. Mm-hmm. We just didn't always have that resource. Kids like you growing up, Kathy, didn't always have that. Kids like me did. And I'm very appreciative of that. And again, no, I'm not alone. There's so many kids out there that are like that and in that situation. You mentioned, thank you so much. I was hoping we'd get that early story of that first play. And I was really looking forward to that. We'll go ahead and time out right here, and we'll come back. And I got just a couple of more stories about questions about WRCT that I want to get to as we celebrate Kathy Miles, her story, and, of course, 50 years of Wisconsin Rapids Community Theater here on Director's Playhouse.
This is locally grown radio, WFHR.
I'm Dan Schaefer. Let's recombobulate. Wisconsin's next major election is already here. The race for state Supreme Court is ramping up with just a few weeks to go before the April 1st general election. Much like the race 2 years ago, this will determine the balance of power on the court. If Susan Crawford wins, the court remains in liberal control. If Brad Schimmel wins, the court flips back to a right-wing majority. But there are a number of differing dynamics from the race in 2023. That race, won by Janet Protasiewicz, was the culmination of a years-long effort for liberals to win control of the court. Now they're playing defense to keep that majority. This also begins a run of 6 years in a row with a race for Wisconsin Supreme Court on the spring election ballot. Because of which justices will be up in coming years, if Crawford wins this year, the court will likely remain in liberal control until at least 2028. Find more bigger picture analysis of the race in my latest column at the Recombobulation Area.
Locally grown radio, WFHR. You can always continue the conversation on social media. Share your thoughts when you find and follow Civic Media on Facebook, X, and Instagram.
CBS News Brief. Growing frustration as the Elon Musk-led Doge Department continues to lay off or fire thousands of federal workers in the name of cost-cutting. Rob McCabe lost his job at the IRS.
For Elon Musk to, like, use a chainsaw on stage to mock the people that he just fired. Like, there is a human element to this whole thing.
The Vatican says Pope Francis is in critical condition as he battles pneumonia. Retired Archbishop of Los Angeles, Robert Mahoney.
Our prayers and thoughts surround him, and we just pray, especially that he recovers and is able to continue his ministry.
Ukraine's president says he is willing to make sacrifices for the sake of peace, Volodymyr Zelensky, through an interpreter.
If there is peace for Ukraine, if you really need me to leave my post, then I'm ready to do that for the sake of peace.
Russia invaded Ukraine 3 years ago tomorrow. CBS News Brief, I'm Heather Bosch.
Enjoying this local program? Find the complete Civic Media lineup at civicmedia.us or the Civic Media app.
Central Wisconsin weather. I'm Corey Hartman. For tonight, temperatures in the low 30s and winds gusting to 25 out of the south. Winds continue to gust on Monday. They switch around to the west. We'll have partly sunny skies and a high near 45. Some sprinkles or flurries on Monday night with a low of 27.
It's 39 at our studios.
The Badgers.
Seeds Max fakes the three, takes the three, left side, yes sir.
Flee.
Pivots, fades, flips, good again. Just outside the left elbow.
Here.
Goes up, got it, with the right hand, it counts and a foul.
This is your radio home for Wisconsin Badger basketball.
Brought to you by 8th Street Auto, Econ Electric, and Johnson & Sons Chrysler Jeep. Listen on 97.5 FM, 1320 AM WFHR, streaming live on the Civic Media app.
You're listening to the American Democracy Minute, keeping your government by and for the people. Mississippi has one of the country's worst records for protecting voting rights and advancing democracy reforms. So when pro-voter bills emerge from the state House and Senate, like in-person early voting and the ability to cure a mismatched absentee signature, democracy advocates take notice. Mississippi is one of only three states without some form of in-person early voting, along with Alabama and New Hampshire. The Mississippi Free Press reports that February 12th, the Mississippi Senate passed SB 2654, allowing 15 days of early voting, ending the Saturday before the election at noon. The Republican-sponsored bill passed 39-12, but even if the House advances, it may still be vetoed by Mississippi Governor Tate Reeves, who accused the bill's sponsor of making the state's elections less secure. The Mississippi House also took some positive steps. HB 1419 prohibits moving or closing a polling place location within 60 days of an election, sometimes used as a voter suppression tactic. HB 163 sets rules for absentee ballots where the signature on file doesn't match the signed outer ballot envelope and would give the voter a chance to cure the problem. and HB 288 would make each county's five election commissioners nonpartisan positions. All three bills now move to the Senate. We have more on these bills and local reporting at AmericanDemocracyMinute.org. I'm Brian Beal.
You're listening to pre-recorded content produced by Civic Media.
Welcome back to WFHR's Director's Playhouse, everybody. Seth and James here with you, and we have brought into the studio Kathy Miles, talking a little bit with Kathy and her journey, her life story, and all of that above. And, of course, we're talking Wisconsin Rapids Community Theater, as we're not only celebrating 50 years of Wisconsin Rapids Community Theater this year, but also just celebrating the arts and celebrating a theater all of us love in different ways and for so many reasons. And Kathy, one of the things that I've done my homework on you over the years. I know your backstory, and I know quite a bit about you. But one of the things that I actually came across was an old story. I'm a gigantic fan of Steppenwolf Theater in Chicago. It's one of my dream jobs is to do a play on there. I don't care if I'm just an extra in the background. And I'm very proud of that theater, being a Midwest kid, being a Chicagoan and everything. And I love the history and the origin stories of things, as you have found out. One of the stories I just came across, and I'd never seen the details of, I just heard rumors of, but when they were first starting in the very first plays that they did, they, of course, would bring people in and stuff, and they're hoping to – but they had the bathroom areas, but they didn't have the money for toilet paper. So John Malkovich and Gary Sinise would, during intermissions, would run to, like, gas stations and places and, like, ask to use their bathroom and steal their toilet paper to bring to have into there. And of course, all these decades later and everything, Steppenwolf – just my opinion, I think, is the Broadway of the Midwest. I think that Steppenwolf Theater has built such a reputation, and the talent and the people they bring into it. It just is pretty cool to see where it started from Malkovich and Sinise running around stealing toilet paper to where now it's one of the premier places to play if you want to be a performer here in the Midwest. I'm curious of those early days of WRCT and maybe not stealing toilet paper. Hopefully you didn't have to do that. But some of those early days of getting this established, of getting this built.
Yes, well, we didn't have to steal Thank toilet goodness. Paper.
Thank goodness.
What can I tell you about it? It was a matter of constantly reaching out and trying to bring in people who had talents. Connecting with people. That was really important. People would pop up and say, "Oh, hey, I've got some lights here at this alternative school where I teach. You need some lights?" Yes, we do. So it is a matter of bringing in resources. You do that. By the way, I interviewed Gary Sinise once.
Oh, really?
But much later. I think it was for Forrest Gump.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, wow.
Yeah.
Oh.
In Vienna. He brought it to a festival in Vienna. But anyway,
cool.
That's a whole other story.
We'll talk about it. We'll get that story for me one day. Well, part two. Well, our second interview. Well, it's really, I just think it's so interesting to see where these things start. You mentioned, the theater, for those that don't know and maybe not been in town, the theater used to be a part of McMillan Library, and that was where our shows used to take place and everything. To see it go from that to having your own walls, your own building, your own backstage, or all that. I wanted to ask you, as we're kind of wrapping up talking about Wisconsin Rapids Community Theater here a little bit, what it must mean to sit back and see where it is now. But even just rewind a little bit before that, when the theater went from the library, which we loved, and a big shout out to McMillan Library and all the, I did some shows there at that stage and I loved my time there. But the idea of going from that to having your own theater, your own stage, what that must have felt like for you.
Yes, I was very lucky to happen to be in town during those years. And also, I was so fortunate when Ellen Raessler asked me if I would like to direct the last show at McMillan Library, which was Gypsy.
Yes, yes.
As you know. Mm. And then to do the first show in the new theater. you know, how lovely that was and how thoughtful that was. But that was also a matter of really reaching out to the community. We were so lucky to have a gift from Gilbert and Jay Lee Mead. And then we were so lucky to have somebody like Larry Nash come on and head up our fundraising team and use all of his resources and connections to twist elbows. I don't know, I suppose you already know this, but we topped our goal by something like 1 or 2%. Yeah. And wow. That's like, who does that?
That's
most people are like, oh my God,
we're
we just need
short,
that
yeah.
last 1 or 2% or more.
Yeah.
And we topped it. But it was about having built up over those many years the goodwill and the connections in the community and people realizing that, yeah, we want this to exist. But it's wonderful to have a space of your own and also to see how that space has grown from what it was. And we were lucky to have a connection with the city. To have their support. Jerry Bach originally was so, so supportive of us when he was mayor and really, you know, worked to make things happen for us. But that's how things happen when you have a lot of support, when it doesn't depend on one person or a couple of people. You do have to have... when you're starting up something, you do have to have probably your figurehead person who is going to devote every ounce of their strength and source and everything they have and is so committed to making this thing succeed. But you also have to realize if you have an idea that can succeed. I think that's kind of crucial. Years later, I put together some festivals here in town, but I wouldn't have done that if I didn't think that I had enough of a base and had enough resources that I was going to actually be able to do them.
Yeah.
So you can test the waters a little bit if you see something, if there are too many obstacles, you know, leave that, move on to something else. If you have a creative mind, man, you can always find something else that you want to do.
Very true. Absolutely. I want to speak real quick to the ability of a community theater to have their own space. So many, I've moved around a lot. Some people have heard this story before, but I've moved since I've been married to a pastor. We move around quite a bit to different churches, and I have seen community theaters most of the time. With most, it's beg, plead, and, you know, try to find a place to perform. It can be extremely difficult. I thought it was so cool when we moved into town here and saw the community theater, you know, right across the street, you know, from where we lived. It was, you know, we check it out and we were like, wow, this is amazing. Look at this facility that they have here. This is so cool that they have something that's solid. It's theirs. They don't have to worry about, well, where are we going to store the costumes? Where are we going to store, you know, our flats? Where all this stuff that goes in, you don't even think about it when you're at, you know, you go to a show, you know, where does all this stuff go when the show is done? To have that there, to have the studio theater there to do other kinds of projects. I mean, it's a blessing for a community theater like this to have that kind of facility.
Yeah, I have to say it's pretty impressive. I am part of a professional theater group in Prague, and they have a theater of their own. They rent it. They don't own it. But, you know, it's not nearly as nice as our theater.
It's really
and that's
nice.
A professional company with a big budget.
Right.
I think it's quite unusual.
It is.
To have something like this as a community theater. And it's a resource for the community, too.
That story and sharing so much of that with us, and thank you for that, Kathy, because it's a testament to what people can do from a grassroots level when they really want to accomplish something. And that can bleed into everything, even not even just the arts. But I have a lot of nonprofits on the air with us that I think that have very similar stories to how they started. And festivals we have in this area that started that way. That it reminded me of that very much when you were talking about that. It also speaks to something else to comes up with our nonprofits and a lot with how great this community is and how much it supports these things and how and just blown away I am every day, literally every day, by the support that this community shows, whether it's to the United Way or WRCT or the Family Center or so many different things that this community is able to do. And not just the, you know, Wisconsin Rapids here, specifically Wisconsin Rapids, but Central Wisconsin really in general and the neighboring cities here too that do such a great job. But then the other end of that, too, going back to what we were talking about in the, originally, it also speaks to how much this community needed this and how much this community wanted this, whether they realize it or not. Because as soon as it shows up, it's not surprising to see a lot of people being like, oh, yeah, I want to be a part of that. And the story of people offering lights or costumes or anything else, you see that it's a mutual beneficial situation where, yes, we as artists and you yourself were looking for this and wanting this. And every kid that goes to school around here is going to have a local theater, not just a local theater, but a local kids theater, too, that they can start in.
Yes.
and everything.
Yeah.
The gift that is and the support that is, because whether a kid goes on to become the next George Clooney or whatever is here or there. It's no different than when we're talking sports. Not every kid's going to go on to be a professional athlete, but the opportunities that gives them, the confidence that gives them, well, they can take that into whatever they do in life, no matter what they do. And that's what the arts can do. And having HOPO Productions, WRCT, along with our other local theaters around here that I want to shout out as well, we're able to give that to kids. We're able to invest in the greatest thing we can invest in the future. You know, that's what this does. You look at that WRCT, you look at 50 years and you think about that stuff. And, oh, that's really cool. We have that in town. It means so much more than just putting on great shows. It's so much bigger than that. It's really a cool opportunity and very cool to hear the history of so much of this. I just appreciate that very much, Kathy. And I would like to talk a little bit, because Kathy is not just a great actor and director, but you have other great outlets as well, creatively. I noticed it, and I didn't even notice this when we didn't talk a lot more and everything. You're a writer. You've done some writing as well for Variety and some other places as well.
I was a correspondent for Variety for... gosh, I don't know, 10 or 12 years from Vienna and from Prague.
Wow.
I started first as a theater critic, writing for them.
Perfect. Was that tough? Was that tough for you to be on the other side of it a little bit?
Well, I had, because I'd worked in New York and I'd seen so many, many, many plays over the years, and I got to Vienna and I had an infant daughter at the time and didn't have a job. I moved there because my husband got a job there. And I joined a local women's group, and I volunteered to write a column about theater for their newsletter. And after a year, I thought, oh, I can actually do this. I kind of like it. So then I started sending theater reviews off to Variety. And the third one I sent, I heard back from them. And he said, okay, actually, here's our format. So you need to put it like this. And he printed it. And I became their theater critic. And I did that for a number of years until I started to realize, and then they asked me to review films. So I was a film critic for them also. Okay. And then they asked me to write articles, and then I became a journalist and a correspondent for them. And I wrote for a number of other international publications in that capacity also. And including American Theater Magazine.
Oh, cool.
But I realized I liked writing about the shows that I loved. I didn't like so much writing about the things that I didn't like, because I could feel how much everyone had given to a production. I knew from my own experience that if you're an actor up on stage and somebody doesn't say, you are the most amazing gift that God ever gave the earth, you're going to feel like, oh, it wasn't good enough. And I didn't like doing that. And so I withdrew from writing as a critic, except if I could talk about something that I really liked. That's how I started writing for Variety. You just you just put yourself out there. And I had read Variety for so many years, and I thought, well, I need to be working for them. I knew that was where I should be.
That's a great story. That's amazing. Cool. Good on you. And yes, you put yourself out there and you just never know what can happen.
Well, I thought at one point I was going to get fired because I wrote about a film festival that was a disaster, and the editor-in-chief happened to be a guest at that film festival. And he called me and said, we should meet. So we met in Prague. It was a very nice dinner, and I was, you know, tap dancing my way all through that. And I said to him, you know, if I'm going to write something, if I'm going to say something positive about this, then I have to be able to speak honestly about this, to write honestly about this. We were strong friends ever after. I said to him, oh my gosh, I don't know. I seem to be making a lot of enemies in this job as a journalist writing about the entertainment industry. And he said, how many enemies are you making? I said, oh, about one a week. And he said, I think you're doing your job right.
He's got a point.
That's kind of how it works, right? Yeah.
It's wild. That's awesome. I'm curious, Kathy, I want to talk a little bit about your acting career and the work that you've done there. And it's kind of interesting. I don't know about you, if you see it this way or not. You may not even thought about it. But one of the ways you can see Kathy's work, you can actually see her in the movie Eurotrip, showed up in there. I want to say, though, I find that kind of symmetry of that kind of interesting with you ending up in Europe and you being in a movie called Euro Trip. I'm sorry, but I couldn't help that connection.
Which was filmed at the American High School in Prague.
How do you like it? How do you like that? You can't plan these kind of things.
No,
but
not at all.
Certainly, I note that as a segue into the conversation, certainly, but that was one of your experiences. Can you tell us some of your other favorite acting experiences, some of your favorite roles that you've had?
So I recently did a couple of parts in Prague. One of them was The Book of Will, which I think was done recently at a theater, maybe in Warsaw.
I want to say it was Warsaw or Marsha.
And I played Shakespeare's widow. And that was, what a wonderful play that is. The author was intending to come to Prague for the production, but she unfortunately had some illness and it kept her from attending. And the other thing that I did right around the same time was play the role of Sir Andrew Aguecheek in Twelfth Night, which is not a part I would ever have thought of casting myself in. But there's this wonderful director, Lisa Volpe, who I brought here to Artie Grand. She directed a production of As You Like It here. She's amazing. She is the actress who has done more of Shakespeare's male roles. She has performed more of his male roles than any other actress in history.
Wow.
She's really well known and very highly regarded. Mm-hmm. And we've become friends, and she was coming to town to Prague to direct this. And she said, oh, how would you like to play this part? And I was like, sure. I was like, what in the world am I ever going to do with this? Because a friend of mine had played it at the New York Shakespeare Festival, Peter McNichol, who some people might know from Ally McBeal.
I love Peter McNichol.
He had played this part, and it was one of the funniest things I ever saw.
No doubt.
He got tangled up with a vine on the stage. I mean, it was hysterical. And I thought, I've got like these shoes to fill, but I can't do what he did. And man, that was, what a challenge it was. And I brought in a lot of influences, including one from Wisconsin Rapids. Jody Steinke had asked me to play the part of the Dowager Duchess in her Downton Abbey tribute thing. And so I had done the Maggie Smith thing with the voice.
Oh, nice.
And so I thought, okay, I'm going to steal a little bit of that oddity of, you know, of Maggie Smith in here. And then, you know, maybe I'll do like the Queen's English where it's, hey, don't think so. And so I brought all of these things in. And then Lisa's like, okay, Kathy, now you need to pull back. But, I mean, man, give your director everything. Give them something to work with when you're on stage as an actor.
Yes.
And don't be afraid. Go home. Do your homework. It's up to you to bring in the character. It's not up to your director to tell you every step to take and every way to say a line. They can do that if you need them to, but it's so much better when you bring something in.
Because, it's more fun. It's a lot more fun to do it that way. Yeah.
You know, when we were working with Mandy, I would ask everybody in working on the show, the three, three or four of you creatives around the show with Mandy, say, well, what do you think about this? Yeah. And you draw from everybody and use the best ideas from everybody and don't be afraid. And that's what I found about the really, really good, strong directors and leaders. They're not afraid of other people's ideas.
Absolutely. We are wrapping up our conversation with Kathy Miles now. And just one more question for you, Kathy. Before we do, though, I do want to take the moment. We touched on this a little bit earlier and just let you know how much I appreciate you, how much this community appreciates you. I mentioned before about, like Seth, I moved around a lot. And I came out here and didn't really feel like I not only belonged anywhere, but I had a whole lot of friends. I was 18 and I tried out for Corpse at WRCT. And I walked in there, and I immediately felt better. And then I auditioned, and I felt pretty good. And then I get the part. And it's my first lead role. It's two lead roles. And I've never acted like this before in this kind of situation. And I had a rough go of it at first. But then I had Steve Martin and Linda Garsky literally take me under their wing. And it changed my life. It literally changed my life. I'm not even talking about acting and me wanting to be an actor from a young age or any of that. It gave me a home. It gave me somewhere where I felt like I belonged. And so that I thank you for. But speaking of that dream, I'm 7 years old and I learn about the Screen Actors Guild. And my first goal in life is to be a member of that club. I want to be a part of that guild. I want to be able to say I'm a professional actor. Whatever else happens in my career, my life, I can say that I'm a SAG member. And years and decades later and everything, I get the chance to audition for Kathy Miles in Gypsy. And I'm excited. So I just want to be a part of the play. I don't even care what part I got. I just want to be able to have you direct me. And that was an amazing experience right there. What I learned from you, how I grew as an actor, especially not so much on stage, but especially backstage. And what Mark and I were able to do with the rest of the crew and the great cast we had and everything. But then you give me a casting opportunity to be in No Names. A wonderful independent film that was directed around here. Many people remember and encourage you to go out and watch. And in order to be in that, I have to be a Screen Actor Guild member. So you helped me. It literally helped me with the audition as you recorded my audition for me. You get me the opportunity to audition for that, which gets me the part, which gets me into the Screen Actors Guild, which doesn't happen without you.
Oh, wow.
So you literally helped my dreams come true.
I'm so thrilled to hear that.
Not only did you help with that, but you helped them in so many ways, and I appreciate you.
Well, I want to say something else to what you've talked about here, and I think if there's any message that you can give to people is that if you have a passion for something, you can find a way to live that passion. You don't have to live in New York. You don't have to live, in Chicago. Where you are, you can find a way to enjoy that, to grow it, to indulge in it, and to share it with others. If that's what you really want to do, you will find a way to make it happen.
Yes. So well said.
Personally, I mean, I love that story, James. But for me, too, it's been a theater has just being a part of community theater. That's how I met my wife. That is when I moved here, that's where I met James. Mm-hmm. We were in the show together. Mm-hmm. And that's how a roundabout way I ended up where I am right now here at the radio station. Yeah. So I have actually theater to thank for things that have nothing to do with theater.
Yeah.
Because of meeting people, because of interacting, getting to know people in the community. That's one of the great things when you first move. Find the theater. That's what Beth and I do, my wife. We always do. We find the theater and we find great people and we find great things to do. We find ways to expand ourselves in the community. So,
and when you are involved in theater, man, do you ever get to know people?
You do.
Yeah, you do. Yeah.
A lot better than you may want to, but
yeah, absolutely.
You get to learn really well.
There is no personal, space or any of that stuff. Yeah.
Kathy, if you could have coffee with any historical figure, who and why? I know it's not fair. It's not fair.
It's
a question.
We ask it to everybody.
Horrible. I'm a horrible person. I am.
Oh man, I don't know, but I would say I'm so in awe of Chekhov and what he did.
Yeah,
that's he's probably
good answer.
Yeah,
love
it. Yeah, great answer. The questions I would have. And actually, now that I'm thinking about it, I wonder if I would actually say anything. I feel like I'd be so almost either afraid to say something or just wanted to take in so much of what that was said.
I would just want to watch him.
Yeah.
I would be happy to sit there in the corner of the room and watch him write.
Absolutely. Yeah. I'll be right behind you.
Awesome. That's great
answer, Kathy.
Awesome.
Amazing conversation. I cannot thank you enough for the time today. And how wonderful this is that it worked out you were in town. This is just
I've
great.
I've enjoyed it so much. Thank you so much.
We look forward to because you did too good of a job, Kathy. You might have to come back. You might have to come back sometime. So, but thank you very much. Not only for the obvious things and the things that you have done for our community and with our community, but hanging out with Seth and I today. We appreciate you.
Oh, it's been so much fun, and thank you for having this program. I think this is really great. And you talked about how important the arts are, and I think that's a message that needs to be repeated over and over and over.
Mm-hmm. Yep. Yeah. I agree. 100%. Totally agree.
That'll wrap up the show, everybody. Thank you so much for joining us for another Director's Playhouse. Spread the word about the show. Spread the podcast on your social media. And we'll be back with you again real soon.
Not completing high school is more of a social thing than it was an academic thing. Even though all these years have passed, I still had that longing to have my diploma.
At age 30, Carissa finished her high school diploma.
If you're even considering getting your high school diploma, you can do it.
No one gets a diploma alone. If you're thinking of finishing your high school diploma, you have help. Find free adult education classes near you at finishyourdiploma.org. That's finishyourdiploma.org. Brought to you by the Dollar General Literacy Foundation and the Ad Council.
Reviewing the week's legal news with a friend of the court.
Well, I'm looking forward to Saturday morning. I haven't missed one. Outstanding, just like being in school.
It has been a week in the areas of law and government and the aspiration for justice in America. As always, I am delighted. I am honored that you have chosen to spend some of your weekend time with me in discussion.
Amicus, a law review with Jim Santel. Saturday mornings from 9 to 11.
No more mold. No more damage. No more slipping and hurting. Make your ordinary bathroom extraordinary for only $99 per month. New shower, new door, new tub, new wall, new anti-slip technology. BCI Bath and Shower is made in America for the highest quality. First 50 callers save $1,500 on a never-clear glass treated door. BCI Bath and Shower. Interest-free financing options. 800-329-4115. 800-329-4115. 800-329-4115.
This is your local Civic Media radio station. Want to hear even more? Anytime? Find all of it at civicmedia.us. This is locally grown radio. WFHR 1320 AM. W248DE Wisconsin Rapids. And always streaming on the Civic Media app.
Fear you may be missing out? We're always streaming on TuneIn and the Civic Media app. Enjoy listening live or catch up by finding the podcast at civicmedia.us or wherever you enjoy listening to your podcasts.
This is CBS News on the Hour, sponsored by O'Reilly Auto Parts.
I'm Heather Bosch. The Trump administration is jump-starting its effort to lay off most federal employees who work for the foreign aid program USAID, the latest from CBS's Linda Kenyon.
Federal workers challenged the layoffs in court, but a federal judge rejected their pleas to extend a stay on those job cuts. The result is 611 workers deemed essential have been notified. But the Trump administration, through the Department of Government Efficiency, will eliminate 2,000 other positions at USAID. ID, while a fraction of worldwide employees will be placed on administrative leave. A separate judge ruled the administration must restore funding to USAID's programs worldwide, at least temporarily. Linda Kenyon, CBS News, the White House.
In an email, Elon Musk is demanding hundreds of thousands of other federal workers explain what they recently accomplished. Republican Senator John Curtis tells